We're holding Parshas Miketz. What we have seen until now is that Yosef and his siblings all, we could say mildly, didn't get along with all the explanations that we added last week. And so the siblings, when Yosef comes to them out in Shechem, in Dothan, so Levi throws him into the pit, and they take his clothing off and they sell him down to Egypt. And Yosef has had to contend with his siblings, and then the wife of Potiphar wants to seduce him. And when he lives up to that test, what does he get in return? He gets thrown into the dungeons. He is back in jail. And Yosef is going to spend the next 10 years in jail. We saw that when Yosef left his father, he was 17. And in our parsha, when he's going to be appointed king, he's going to be 30 years old. It means 13 years will pass. And those 13 years break down to 1 year in Potiphar's house and 12 years in jail. And the first 10 years passed in last week's parsha. And after 10 years in jail, he comes across the Sarah Ophim and Sarah Mashkim and their dreams, and he interprets their dreams for them. And then his interpretation comes true. The Sarah Mashkim is reinstated, and the Sarah Ophim is hung, is killed. And our parsha begins, Vayhi miketz shnatayim yamim, 2 years later. Meaning we're up to 12 years Yosef has spent in the dungeons. He's been in jail for 12 years. And Pharaoh has a dream. And in Pharaoh's dream, he's standing upon the Nile. And before we continue, we have to remind ourselves the importance of the Nile in Egyptian society, in Egyptian agriculture. Egypt gets their main source of water is the Nile. And when the Nile rose, so then it would go through canals and ditches and waterways to water all the fields, and that was their source of water. Paro is a generic term for king, just like Avimelech. It's like His Highness, Mr. President, and that's why people refer to Paro as Paro. It's not like they're calling him by his first name, but rather they're calling him by His Majesty. So Paro claims, Li yoriv ani asitini. I am master of the Nile. I control when the Nile rises. I created myself. Paro claims he is a god. And Pharaoh dreams that he is standing over the Nile, over the source of the sustenance of the Nile, the sustenance of the Egyptian people. By the way, historically, one of the ways that the priests would control the people in Egypt was by developing the Egyptian calendar. The Egyptian priests who controlled the calendar, they knew when the Nile would rise. And they claimed that it was their powers, they could foretell when the Nile would rise. And this was a way of controlling the people. If they don't behave, they won't tell the Nile to rise, right? So Pharaoh dreams 7 good-looking cows. I'm not a shepherd, but I don't know what a good-looking cow is. So obviously it means a cow that's well-fed. He sees 7 good cows, and he sees 7 cows that look emaciated, and the 7 cows that are emaciated looking, they consume the 7 well-fed cows, and Paro awakes. And he has a second dream, and he says, now before we go on to the second dream, we have to ask ourselves a question. Cows are herbivores, they don't eat meat. It's a little bit unusual to dream a dream in which cows are carnivores. They're eating other cows. Now, we have a rule that ordinarily in dreams we see something which we see in normal life. We don't see things. You don't see, the Gemara's term is, you don't see an elephant going through the eye of a needle. You don't dream things which are unusual in common life. Pharaoh dreams a second dream, and he sees again 7 stalks of barley, 7 good stalks, and then 7 bad stalks. They sprout, and they, one understanding is they swallow, another understanding is they cover up. The 7 stalks that were good, and Paro awakens. And when he awakens, he calls all his wise men, and he tells them his dream, and no one could give him the answer. So different wise men gave different interpretations. You'll have seven daughters, the seven daughters will pass away, you'll win seven wars, you'll lose seven wars. And what Paro did was, when he would tell over the story, he'd always leave out some details from the dream. He'd tell him the dream, and he'd leave out some of the details, and when they said their interpretation, so Paro was never happy with the interpretation. And Paro, his officer who always brings him his drinks, his butler, that same one who was in jail with Yosef, he comes to Paro and he says, I have to confess, I have to tell you my two sins. One sin, I promised Yosef I'd remember him, and I forgot him. And the other sin, I know that you want someone to interpret your dreams, and I haven't come forward and told you yet, so I apologize for procrastinating, but when I was in jail, so there was a lad, an Ivri, a slave, he heard my dreams and he interpreted them correctly. Now, here we see that he has it in for Yosef. Rashi says, Arurim arsha'im she'en tovatam shlema. The Rishayim are cursed that even when they do good things, they always stick in some bad with it. They don't go all the way out to help someone else. Here, he has the chance to pay Yosef back. He has the opportunity to repay the kindness that Yosef had taken the time to hear his dream and give him a good interpretation. What does he do? He describes Yosef as a lad, not one worth of any honor. In Ivri, a Hebrew. The Egyptians were disgraced by the Hebrews. They didn't like the Hebrews because the Hebrews would eat the meat that the Egyptians would bow to. Here he's bowing to the cow or the calf, and here he's eating it next to him, so they didn't like the Hebrews. And he's telling him he's a slave, he's not fit for any honors. So he does the exact opposite. The one time when he could repay Yosef's kindness, he mentions Yosef because he doesn't have a choice. He's scared if word gets out that he knew about this, then he's in danger. And at the same time, he says everything negative that he could about Yosef. And there's something to think about. We all have this tendency. That when we're doing someone a favor, so we always have it in for the other person. Ramchal writes that there's no chassan, there's no person, no bachelor, or I don't know if it only encompasses bachelors, who attends a wedding of a friend that isn't a little bit stung by it. We all sometimes feel bad when something good happens to someone else. We have a hard time feeling good for someone else. That's the concept of ein tova, good eye, that we want to see good for other people. Well, it's not easy. It's not the way we are naturally. Naturally, we want good for ourselves, and not only for ourselves, but we want to have one better than someone else. That's what they say the word, v'avtal ra'acha kamocha. Usually you could love your friend so long as he doesn't have as much as you. I want him to have it good, but not as much as me. I should always have a drop more. And the Torah tells us, v'avta, you should love your friend kamocha, that he should have as much as you. That's unnatural. So when Paro hears that Yosef is so good at interpreting dreams, he sends his butler, he tells him, you go get Yosef. They rush Yosef out of the pit, they shave him, they change his clothing, and they bring him before Paro. The Kutzker Rebbe has a beautiful vart. He says, why did they have to rush Yosef out of the pit? The Pasuk stresses that they made him run along. So he says, in heaven, when they decree that a person should have troubles and difficulties, so they decree to which second he's supposed to have difficulties. And when that second comes, that's it, it's over. So his difficulties are supposed to end. So Yosef's second came. That's it. Now he's supposed to go from being in the dungeons to being king. So they had to rush him out of the pit. That's it. There's no reason to detain. He has to be a king. So Yosef is brought before Paro, and Paro tells him, I heard that you hear a dream, you can interpret it right away. And Yosef automatically attributes the greatness to where it belongs. He says, I'm not the one that really can answer. God should answer Paro. And Paro tells him the dream, and again he leaves out certain details, as we see in the Psukim. And Yosef right away gives him an interpretation, and with the interpretation he adds all the details which Paro had left out. Yosef tells Paro, he tells him, you had a both dreams represent the same thing, that there are going to be 7 years in which there'll be a lot of growth in the land of Egypt, and then there'll be 7 years of famine, where you wouldn't be able to remember anything of the prosperity that had been during the first 7 years. And the fact that you saw the dream twice is because God's rushing is going to be soon. And then Yosef gives him some advice. And he tells him, you should appoint a wise person on Mitzrayim, and he will divide up the land and gather the food during the good years. Why is Yosef giving him advice? So the simple understanding is, Yosef sees an inn. He says, I interpreted the dreams. If I give him this advice, maybe I'll get in. But there's a deeper understanding. On one level, Yosef's ensuring that the world will remain. Yosef is Hamashbir. Yosef is the one that sustains the world ultimately with this piece of advice. And the Torah stresses, and Yosef also stresses, that Paro had one dream, awoke, and had a second dream. So Yosef was telling him part of the interpretation to the dreams and your awaking in the middle is that just like when you awaken, suddenly you have your senses, you think about things, you try to come to conclusions, so too, now that you're getting the interpretation to these dreams, you have a responsibility to the people, you have a responsibility to the world, to think about it and appoint someone who will take care of this. That's what the fact that you woke in between the dreams, that's what it represents. Rabbi Tendler quoted from Hasidish Rebbe that when people have it well, so ordinarily they think it'll always go well. Why do people take out mortgages that are almost as much as they make? Because they figure if it's going well today, it'll go better tomorrow. That's our tendency. We always think it'll always be at least as good as it is today. And Yosef was telling Paro, it's not enough to tell people there will be 7 bad years and everyone should put away food. You have to appoint someone who will tax the people and take from the people and figure out how to store the food, because if left to their own whims, people use the money they make. They won't store the money. And that's why Paro automatically says to his servants, did you ever see someone so smart who recognizes not only that we have to think in advance, but that we have to take an active role in this, that we as government, we can't leave it to people and tell them, you should know there are going to be 7 good years and 7 bad years, store the food. But the tendency of people is that even if you tell them, you know, there will be a rainy day, people don't store money. And this is something to remember, guys. Now, I don't know how many of you are making money, but when people start off life, so very often the first few years of marriage are the years that you do have extra money. You don't have as many expenses with kids, education and everything else. So those are the years that people usually can put away money, and those are the years that people usually like to go out, they dine, they get a nice car. And if a person isn't getting married, he's going to live a few years as a bachelor. So also, very often that's when people do have extra money to put away. And usually people don't. Usually people think, it's going to get better, my salary will go up, I have a good job. And the truth is that we have to learn from Yosef's wisdom. People should put away money. At your age also, it's a good habit. Americans have a bad habit. It's called spending. Israelis have a bad habit. It's called living in the red. And the Torah says we should develop good habits. And that is save money. And even if a person can only save 10 shekel a month, it's a good habit to get into. Someone sent me an email the other day that everyone's worried about how you could get more money in your nest. So for most people, the option of getting a job that pays more money isn't so viable. So then what you have to do is save more money. And then people say, so invest in a better IRA, invest in a better program. But the simple way to save more money is to spend less money. Every penny you don't spend, you actually do save. And that's not what we're accustomed to thinking. Usually we think, this is nice, this is nice, I'll enjoy this, I'll get good use out of that. But at the end of the day, a penny saved is a penny earned. We have to learn from Yosef to put money away. Guys, if you could do it now, you should do it now. You could open up in almost any bank programs where they'll invest the money for you. CDs, it doesn't matter. The important thing, it does matter, but I don't know what to advise you financially. But I can only tell you that the concept should be there. You should try to save money. And even if it's 5 shekel a week, 10 shekel a week, you could put it away, it adds up. Piggy banks is not as good because your money should be making money. If you just leave it in the side, so your money isn't making money. It's a good idea to divide your assets. Part of it put in a gemach, so then you're making interest in heavens. The gemach keeps lending out the same money, and you keep getting mitzvahs out of it. And part of it put away. I know a rabbi that when young couples come to him and ask him where should we give tzedakah to, so he says, before you ask me where you should give tzedakah, ask me where you should invest your money. Because everyone thinks about the tzedakah, and people don't think about themselves and their children. They'll have to marry kids off in 20 years. You guys have to think also about where you're going to invest the money. So both are important. Tzedakah and investments. Yeah.
Since with a bank, you deposit your money, you're basically loaning them money because then they loan out that money to people, and they're giving you interest on the money. Is that related at all to the prohibition on interest?
Yeah. Here in Israel, every bank has to show you. They have a heter iska, a rabbinic document that they arrange their finances in a way that they're allowed to collect and to pay out interest. Because the banks are owned by Jews. But that's why I suggested other things, not a fund where you'll get interest, but rather a fund where they'll invest it. They diversify your investments and hopefully you can make more money. So Paro tells Yosef, I'm putting you second in command. Only the throne will be beyond you. Our sages say that when Paro wanted to appoint Yosef as as king or second in command, so his officer said, can't anoint someone unless he knows 70 languages. And then the Gemara says that night Gabriel came to Yosef in his cell and taught him the 70 languages in advance, so that when Yosef came to Paro, Yosef already knew all 70 languages. And that's what we say in the Shir Shoyom, that about Yosef we say, Eidut b'Yosef Samo, God made a testimony on Yosef, b'tzeito al Eretz Mitzrayim, that Yosef went out in our parsha over the land of Mitzrayim. Sfat lo yedati yishma, language which I hitherto did not know, I now was able to understand. Hasiroti misever shichmo, God removed the affliction from Yosef's side. Yosef was taken from being in the dungeons to being second in command. And that's what the pasuk stresses, that Yosef yatsa, Yosef went out over the land of Egypt. Yosef went out from the situation of being in the dungeons to being second in command, which is unusual. The Medrash says that in order to speak to Paro, you'd get tested. And every language you knew, you could move up a step. So Yosef gets tested one language after the other. He keeps ascending towards the throne. And finally, he gets to the top step where Paro is, and he tells Paro, there's one more language that I know. I know Lashna Kodesh, I know Hebrew. And Paro didn't know that. So Paro told Yosef, promise me that you'll never reveal that you know one more language than I do, because then you'll be king and I won't. And Yosef made that promise. And that promise is very important, because in 2 weeks when Yosef wants to go bury his father, Paro says no. And Yosef says, give word to Paro that I promised my father I'll bury him in the Holy Land. And Paro says, so. So Yosef says, well, if I don't have to keep my promises, there's another promise I don't have to keep. And when Paro hears that, Paro says, no, go bury your father like he made you promise. So in our parsha, when Yosef comes to Paro, Yosef knows the 70 languages. And Paro establishes him as over the land of Egypt, and he gives him his ring. Now, if you recall, we mentioned last week that we will see many, many similar themes between our parsha and this whole story of Mordechai. And this is one of them. He gets the royal clothing, he gets the ring, and he's given the royal chariot to ride around Egypt. And we discussed last week, or 2 weeks ago, the Medrash about how all the girls were throwing jewels at him, and this one girl threw her ornament, and he opened it up and he saw God's name and he saw the whole story that she was his niece, and he went and got her and he married her, and that was the girl who grew up in Potiphar's house, Asnat. And some say that Paro wanted him to marry Potiphar's stepdaughter, adopted daughter, because this was a sign that he's clean. The whole story, he spent 12 years in the dungeon, but it was a false arrest. Really, he's okay. And that's why Paro wanted Yosef to marry Potiphar's adopted daughter, because this was a sign that even Potiphar admits that he's okay, he didn't do anything wrong. So Paro changes Yosef's name to Tzochnas Paneach, and this is a sign of ownership. We're going to find it many times in Tanakh, that when someone changes someone's name, it's a sign that you're under me, I control your identity. That's why Nebuchadnezzar also changes Daniel's name and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah's name. And Moshe changes Yoshua's name before Yoshua goes off to spy in the Holy Land to remind him, you're still under my auspices. So Paro changes Yosef's name, and Yosef is 30 years old. 13 years have passed since he left his father. His father is back in the Holy Land mourning his death, and he's in Egypt. He's second in command. We have 7 good years, and during those 7 years, Yosef, in his wise ways, amasses a tremendous amount of food, enough food to sustain the world later on. Now, Yosef stored the food in a very wise way. Whenever he'd get grain, he'd tax the people that they'd also have to bring earth, the earth where the grain grew. And by storing the grain with that earth, and having siyata d'shmaya, and having a lot of wisdom, Yosef ensured that the grain didn't rot. The Egyptians also tried to store some food, but their food all rotted. So Yosef had extra cunning. That was Yosef's wisdom. 17 years old, he joins his brothers at the sheep, and a few days after they start showing him how to shepherd, he's got new tricks. He was very swift. He caught on to things very fast. So over here also, he's in charge of storing the food, and he figures out a good way of doing it. He has 2 children, and Yosef is stuck. On the one hand, he has a father who loves him. And he knows his father is greatly pained by the fact that he's far away from him. And logic would dictate that Yosef would send word back to his father, now that he could, now that he's king, and say, "Hey, Dad, I'm okay." But Yosef does not. And this is a very pressing question. Why does Yosef remain silent? There are different understandings. One, they all basically go along the same lines, all the understandings that I saw. And these understandings will also help us understand what's about to happen between Yosef and his brothers. Yosef had 2 dreams. And we discussed that one of the ways that God gives prophecy is in the form of dreams. Now, when God gives prophecy, we are responsible to listen to that prophecy. If a prophet tells a person, go today, don't keep Shabbos. So on a one-time basis, we listen to the prophet. If a prophet says there's no longer a mitzvah of Shabbos, so we don't listen to him. If a prophet says there's an added mitzvah to the Torah, we do not listen to him. But a prophet can say on a one-time basis that we should not fulfill a certain mitzvah, so long as he's proven himself as a prophet. Yosef knows that he was given prophecy. He was given 2 dreams about how his brothers will bow to him, and ultimately his father will bow to him. And Yosef also knows that with this bowing will begin the enslavement in Egypt. When they come down to bow to him, ultimately they will remain in Egypt, and then the years of servitude will begin. Yosef, on the one hand, doesn't want it to begin, and on the other hand, he has a responsibility to see to it that the prophecies come true. So Yosef remains silent because he has to bring it about that his brothers will bow to him and his father will bow to him. And that's what Yosef says when he names his son. He says, "God, you allowed me to forget all the toil I had gone through, all the hardships, and my father's household," which isn't, doesn't mean he forgot everything he learned. Yosef, quite the contrary, he maintained everything he learned. But God allowed him to overcome the fact that he was connected to his father. He wanted to send word back to his father, and God made it, so to speak, easier for him to contain himself and not send word back to his father. This is one pshat that's brought in the Ketav HaKabbalah. If you're happy with this pshat, good. If you're not, so I'm with you. I mean, there are many answers given. I haven't found an answer that I feel calms me down. So I don't know. There are many answers. We'll keep learning. I mean, one day one of us will come across an answer that we feel answers the question as strongly as the question is. I think the question is very strong, and I don't understand the answer well enough. But this is what it says. This is what I've come across so far. 7 years are up, and now the years of famine begin. Yeah.
Isn't there also one something about like the brothers made him vow that like he wouldn't reveal, but I don't know why he would be bound by a vow that they made that wasn't a good vow. I mean, so, you know, it's like an evil vow.
There is that understanding that the brothers made a cherem that whoever would reveal it would be ostracized, would be in trouble in heaven. There is that understanding as well. What's interesting is that a year before Yosef becomes king, that's when Yitzchak dies. Yitzchak dies when Yosef is 29 years old. Yosef is 30 when he becomes king. And now the 7 years of famine begin, and the famine is worldwide, and Yosef opens the storage houses. And in Egypt, the people run out of food, so they come to Yosef. And now Yosef is going to slowly attain all the wealth of the world and of Egypt. And what Yosef really does over here, by attaining the wealth, Yosef really strengthens the power of the throne. Until now, the people recognized they were under Pharaoh, but there's discussion among the Mefarshim and among archaeologists who was really running the show here. It seems that there was a monarchy that was external to the Egyptian people. Many understandings claim that the kings were not really Egyptians. And so the Egyptians didn't really want to be under their rule. They had conquered them, but they didn't want to be under their rule. And in Yosef's wisdom, by seeing that the source of food, the source of all of their life, would really be the Egyptian kingdom, Yosef was slowly changing the people's mindset to recognize that they need this kingdom, and to be loyal to this kingdom, even though it was people who weren't Egyptian, just like today. The Egyptian monarchy is a minority in Egypt. Most of the Egyptians don't like the king. That's still today, that's the case. So Yaakov tells his kids, go down, I've heard in Mitzrayim that things are, there's food there, why should we stand out? Go get food. And the Pasuk here says something very unusual. The Pasuk says, Vayirdu achei Yosef asara. Yosef's brothers went down. They haven't been with Yosef for 20 years now. And now they're called the brothers of Yosef. So our sages say that all of them had spent the last 20 years contemplating what they did to Yosef. And they all came to the same conclusion. We did wrong. We have to do tshuva. And now when they go down to Mitzrayim, they decide, we're going to go and find Yosef. So Yaakov tells them, we don't need Ein Hara. You guys are good-looking men. You're all strong, handsome, wealthy. Don't go in through the same gate. Go in through 10 different gates. So when they come to Egypt, they're all dressed as Yaakov's children. And they walk in through the 10 different gates of Egypt, and they're thinking, we'll search out Yosef. And they start looking for Yosef. Now, Yosef knew that his brothers would come, so he established at the gates that every person that enters Egypt would have to write his name, his father's name, and his grandfather's name. And at the end of each day, he'd get the list of who came in. And now he gets the list through gate number 1, came in Reuven ben Yaakov, ben Yitzchak. And gate number 2, Shimon ben Yaakov ben Yitzchak. And gate number 3, Levi ben Yaakov ben Yitzchak. So he gets all these names, and he tells his men, close off all the storage houses, leave one open. And he sits by that one, and he's waiting for his brothers to come. 3 days pass, and his brothers don't show up. So he takes 70 men from the armed guards, and he tells them, we're going looking. And they start traveling throughout Egypt. And when they come to the brothels, they find his brothers. So what are his brothers doing there? They say, we know Yosef. He was a good-looking guy. Chances are, they ended up selling him down here. This is where he's probably at for hire. So after having checked out all of Egypt and not finding Yosef, all the brothers were looking through the brothels to find Yosef. So Yosef comes with his men, and according to one understanding, his brothers finally showed up to get the food, and Yosef tells the men, don't give them food, send them before me. When the brothers come before Yosef, he lowers his turban, he covers his eyes. The Medrash says he wore some kind of mask, like Zorro, covered his eyes. The under part of his face, he had grown a beard by then. He had left them at 17 years old. By now he had a full beard. And he looks at his brothers and he waits to see if they're going to react. And they don't react. They don't recognize him. So Yosef tells them, you're all spies. How come you came in through 10 different gates? How come everyone else sends their slaves down to Egypt to get food? And you guys, you come down, 10 brothers, what's going on here? You came here to spy out the land. You guys want to destroy the land. And Yosef tells them, I see that two of you destroyed a city. You two, Shimon and Levi, I see you two destroyed a city. You guys are troublemakers. What are you doing here in Egypt? So they say, no. Truthfully, we came here to get food. So he says, I see you bumped off a brother of yours. So the brothers are scared. And they say, look, we're 12 sons. And one is missing. That's why we were searching throughout Egypt for him. And the other one, the young one, is by the father. And Yosef says, no, you guys are all liars. Send one back home. You guys are staying in prison. And let's see if you're telling the truth. Yeah, says I'm putting you all in jail. All of you are going to stay here. You'll send one back home and fetch him home. He puts them all in jail for 3 days. They're getting nervous. Wait, he puts them all in jail for 3 days, and then on the third day, Yosef walks into them and he tells them, you know, I fear Elohim. He's talking their language. I fear Elohim. Here's what I want. If you're telling the truth, one brother will stay here in jail. And you guys go home. Now he remembered there was one brother who had knocked him into the pit. That was Shimon. And he knows that Shimon and Levi, when they're together, they're a destructive team. So he tells them, you guys go home and bring back the little one, and one guy is staying here. And when he tells them this, so Shimon says, you guys sold Yosef? You're doing the same to me. No way! So Shimon says, let's see who can put me in jail. So Yosef sends her to Paro, and Paro sends along 70 soldiers. The 70 soldiers walk in, and Shimon lets one roar at them. The Medrash says they fell and broke their teeth. So Yosef says, okay. He tells his son Menashe, go take care of him. Menashe goes over and gives him a whack, and Shimon says, that was, ow, that was like, that's from our family. What's going on here? And he puts Shimon in shackles and puts him in jail. And the brothers start saying, you know what, it's our fault. We saw our brother when he was wailing before us and we didn't listen. That's why this is happening to us. Reuven tells them, and here we have to ask ourselves, what's the point in what Reuven's saying? And I don't think we'll get to that today. Reuven tells them, didn't I tell you, don't harm the child? He didn't listen, and now now we're being taken to task for his blood. And when Yosef hears this, he turns around and he goes to cry. Shimon is held in bondage, and the brothers are sent home with the food, and he tells his servant, he tells him, look, whenever they come to collect food, so the way it worked was they give you a sack. At the bottom of the sack was the money. There were a lot of people coming. So to ensure the money didn't get mixed up, they give you a sack with the money on the bottom. The person would take out the money, and according to the amount of money he'd receive, he'd fill the sack with food. So he tells them, leave the food at the bottom of their sacks, put in all the leave the money at the bottom of the sacks, put in all the food on top, and send them back home. They come to their motel on their way home, and Levi opens his sack. Levi was careful in Losachsom Shor Bedisho. That you have to be careful. You can't let the animal thresh without giving it to eat. And the Torah says before a person himself eats, he has to give his animals to eat. So Levi gives the animal to eat, and he sees that his money's there, and he tells his brothers, "My money's back. It's here." And they all get scared, and they say, "Look at what God's doing to us. What's going on here?" Our sages tell us on the pasuk in Mishlei, Ivelet Adam, the foolishness of a person to Selef Dorko, messes up his ways, Ve'al Hashem Yizach Libo, and he gets upset at Hashem. So that pasuk is this. The brothers messed themselves up. This is all an outcome of what they did. What did they do? They say, what did God do to us? And our sages say that this was a sign of their righteousness, that when something went wrong, they automatically asked themselves, what did I do wrong? Why is this happening to me? What is God trying to tell me? Find something, David?
Earlier, I'm not sure if this is relevant. I'm curious if Yosef speaking to his brother in Ivrit or Arit.
No, Yosef has a translator in between. This gives him time to think. They don't think he understands them.
they come. Who opens the sack?
Levi. Levi is the one that opened the sack. They come back to Yaakov, and they tell him what's going on. They say, look, we came to the man, and he was able to tell us what type of wood our beds were made out of. Like he knew everything. He told us as kids, you used to sleep in this bunk bed, you used to sleep in that bunk bed, you used to sleep on this side of the room, that side of the room. He knew everything. So we couldn't say anything. We were scared. We saw that the guy knew things that we never told me, had no way of knowing. And they also knew that he told them that they sold their brother. And they had taken a vow that no one would reveal that Yosef was sold. So they said, how does he know that? Must be he has all kinds of powers. Let's stop and think about what's going on. They have a lot of clues, the brothers. He's telling them about the sale of Yosef. Shimon gets a whack and he says, this one's from our family. This is a whack that only someone from Yaakov's house could have given him. They get their money back. They're getting clues.
And yet, they've searched the whole land of Egypt for him and not found him.
Right, they've just searched the land of Egypt and haven't found him. They know he's supposed to be in Egypt, and they know he had a dream that they'd all come wheat. The wheat would bow to him. And yet, they don't hit the jackpot. We're going to leave it as a question for now, why? Why is it that the brothers can't see through? Why can't they see through the fog? Think about it. At the end of the class, we'll try to answer it. So they tell him, look, the guy who's in charge of the land, he was tough with us. He said we're spies. We told him we're honest. We told him we're 12 brothers, that the young one's at home. And he told us, I'll test you if you're telling the truth. Take the food back to your families and bring the young one back. And as they empty out their sacks, each one sees that his money is still in the sack. And they all get scared, and their father gets scared. And Yaakov tells them, look what you did to me. Yosef's dead. Shimon's gone. You want to take Binyamin? The Medrash says Yaakov was telling them, I don't believe you. I don't believe you about Yosef, and I don't believe you about Shimon. I don't know what happened to Yosef, and I don't know what happened to Shimon. And I'm not letting you take Binyamin. And Reuven said, my two sons are collateral. You want, kill my two sons, but let us take them and go back. And that deserves more focus. What was Reuven telling him? According to this understanding, it's more understandable. Reuven was saying, you don't trust us about Shimon and Yosef. So my two sons are collateral. You believe me, I love my kids. Yaakov told him, you fool. Just like I wouldn't want to kill my kid, I wouldn't want to kill my grandkid. That's no collateral. And Yehuda told the brothers, he said, guys, let him get hungry. Wait, when the old man gets hungry, he won't have a choice. Why should we fight him now? The Mefarshim say, what about Shimon? Why didn't Yaakov care about Shimon? They tell him Shimon's out in bondage in Egypt. We know that the second the brothers left, Yosef took Shimon out of prison and gave him good food and set him up and took good care of him. But the brothers didn't know that. Yosef told Shimon, you have to behave yourself. When the brothers come back, I'm putting you back in jail, and you're continuing to as though you've been in jail until now. But they didn't know that. So how come Yaakov isn't sending them back to get Shimon out? So the Mefarshim say that Yaakov had it in for Shimon. Yaakov was upset at him. Yaakov felt, Shimon, you're not behaving the way you should. So Shimon, you're stuck in jail. Good. It's good for you. Sit in jail. Yaakov wasn't worried about Shimon. He wasn't interested in getting him out so fast. So Yaakov said, fine, I'm not giving you Binyamin. You guys aren't going back. We find even at the end of Yaakov's days, he gives Shimon rebuke, and when he finally agrees to send Binyamin down, he says, and God should let you find favor in the man's eyes, and I'll send back et achichem acher, your other brother. He doesn't even call him by name. He doesn't say Shimon, he says achichem acher, and in Hebrew the word acher is a derogatory term. It's a term that's used for znut, avodah zara, chazir, zara'at, yeshu. That's what the word acher means in Hebrew. It's the other. The other. We always use it as for someone who we don't want to mention his name. So when Yaakov tells the brothers, he says, I'll send down Binyamin, and God should send back the other one and Binyamin.
Did Yaakov at this point not get convinced that Yosef died?
Yaakov thinks Yosef's dead. Yaakov thinks Yosef's dead.
But when he asked, where is, I don't know where is.
So he thinks they killed Yosef, and he's not sure whether they killed Shimon or not. He says, Yosef's gone. I sent him to you guys, and he's gone. I sent 10 of you down to Egypt, you're back 9. Now you want to take my other one? If you think about it, there's more depth to it. When Reuven lost his rights to the firstborn, who got it? Yosef. So he's bumped. Who would we think is the next in line to get it? Shimon. Right? Now Shimon's gone. So Reuven's nervous. Reuven said, when Yosef was gone, they blamed me. They thought I wanted him bumped up. Now Shimon's gone. Who knows what they're thinking? So Reuven steps up and says, Dad, take my kids. I'm not that. I didn't do it. And it's true, Reuven didn't do it. Reuven was the one who said, let's save Yosef. Yeah?
What's the difference? When Reuven asks that, trust on me, I will bring Benjamin back, he refuses. And then it says that Yehuda then asks.
Yehuda waited. Yehuda waited till Yaakov told them it's time to go back.
But and he was still concerned about the...
That deserves a class in of itself, the difference between Reuven and Yehuda, which we might do next week in Vayigash. If we have time Thursday night, I hope we'll deal with it next week. And there's a lot of depth to that, the difference between Reuven and Yehuda. Why Yehuda is chosen as the leader of the Jewish people and Reuven isn't. Yeah.
Did it happen that Reuven lost his birthright to Yosef?
When Reuven erred with Bilhah, whatever happened there, we discussed 2 weeks ago. So then he lost his rights to the firstborn, as it says in Divrei Hayamim, and it was given to Yosef. So Yaakov tells them, go get food. And they tell him, if you're willing to send our brother, you remember when they brought the Ketonis Pasim, Ari then pointed out. They didn't say our brother, they said, is this your son's? Is this your son's garment? Now they're coming to Yaakov and they're saying, Yehuda tells him, the man warned us that we shouldn't show up without our brother. If you send our brother with us, we'll go and get food. And if not, we're not going, because the man told us not to show up without our brother. And then Yaakov suddenly gets the name Yisrael. He tells them, why did you do this to me? To tell the person you have another brother. And then again, they tell him, the man asked us, is our father still alive? Is our grandfather still alive? So they tell him, yeah, our father's still alive. And then here we learn Lashon Nakia, by the way. Yitzchak had passed away a year earlier. So when the brothers, when Yosef asked the brothers, is your father still alive? Is the elder still alive? He means my grandfather, your grandfather, Yitzchak. So they tell him our father's still alive. And the Gemara records that there was Rabbi Chiyo when he came to Babylon, I think. So his uncle asked him, he had an uncle who had a half-brother and a half-sister that weren't connected at all, but through this half-brother. Meaning the father remarried and the mother remarried, and then they had this brother, and they weren't brother and sister, but he was a half brother to both, and they got married, these two. So Rabbi Chiya was their son. So when he came to Bavel, he asked him, Abba Kayam, is your father still alive? Meaning my half brother. So he said, Ima Kayamet, you're not asking about my mother? She's your half sister. So he said, Ima Kayamet, is your mother still alive? So he said, Abba Kayam, my father's still alive. And by that he alluded to him that, but my mother isn't. He wanted him to know that he had lost his sister. So that's what the brothers did over here also. They told him, our father's still alive. And Yosef understood that he had lost his grandfather, that Yitzhak had passed away. So now they tell Yaakov, we didn't know where he was headed. So Yehuda takes responsibility. He says, I'm responsible in this world and in the world to come. If I don't bring him back, I'll sin forever and I'll be held accountable in the world to come. And our sages say that a person should never take on a vow, even on condition, because God takes us to task even if we fill the condition. And that's why Yehuda, after he passes away, his bones don't stop rattling, because he said, I will consider as having sinned even in the world to come. And even though he fulfilled his end of the condition, he did bring Binyamin back alive, but being that he took on such a vow, his bones didn't stop rattling until the end of the 40 years in the desert when Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for him. So Yaakov tells them, okay, fine, I'll give you extra gifts to bring the person. Take double the price. Maybe the price went up since last time you were there. Take double the money and bring back the money that was returned in your sacks. and God should make you find favor in His eyes. Our sages say that Yaakov knew what was going on. He got an inkling of Ruach HaKodesh, that where things were headed. And at the same time, he did a shtadlus. He said, we have to do our best to appease the person. Person shouldn't feel, because I think everything, ikvata de Mashiach, everything's going to go good, things are on the right path, that he could rely on that. No. Person has to do his ishtadlut. So Yaakov sends gifts to this foreign king, food from the land of Israel, the special food of the land of Israel, and he sends extra money, and he blesses them, and he says, Ve'el Shaddai yiten lachem rachamim lifnei ish. And God, who is also known as Shaddai, Shaddai is the one who controls the constellations, he said, now you're going to Galut, you're under the forces of the constellations, may God protect you. And our sages say that he used the term, that term, which means Sha'amar la'olam dai, God said enough to the world, Sheyomar letzaroteinu dai, he should say enough to my sorrows. I had to put up with Lavan, I had to put up with Rachel's passing away, I had to put up with Dina, I had to put up with Yosef. May God say dai, enough suffering for Yaakov. And that was his prayer. He said, you should find favor in his eyes and send you back your other brother and Benjamin. And I, just as I've lost beforehand, I've lost. They take it and they go out. Why is Yaakov so concerned for Binyamin? Because he says, his mother passed when she was traveling. His brother was traveling and he died. So I see that they don't have good mazel on the road. So Yosef sees Binyamin and he tells them, go invite them for a special feast. So they see that they're being brought to Yosef's palace. They get nervous. And the man tells them, no, my master feels bad. Here he pained you, he made you bring the younger brother. Here he pained you, he put one in prison. He feels like he wronged you, he wants to make a party in your honor. And he sits them down at the party, and this is the first time that the brothers will drink wine since they departed from Yosef. And at the party he starts knocking his goblet, and he says, oh, I see Reuven, you're the eldest. You, Yehuda, I see you're his brother from the same mother, and I see you're the leader, you sit with him. And he starts knocking on the goblet, and every time he knocks on the goblet, he tells him, my goblet's telling me. And he starts telling them all of their past, and who they are, and who's from the same mother, and he sits them at the same tables. And then he knocks on the goblet, and he says, you're Binyamin, you're the young brother. You lost your mother when you was a kid. I also lost my mother when I was a kid. Come, sit next to me. So he's they're sitting for the meal, and the brothers are eating and drinking, and he's eating and drinking. When the time comes to leave, so he tells his officer, he says, put their money back at the bottom of their sacks and tell them this time that you're putting the money back. And put my goblet in the young one's sack. And then send them off and seal the sacks and send them off. So they each got gifts from Yosef. And they're on their way home. And Yosef sends his son Menashe. And his son Menashe comes riding with his men out after the brothers. And he says, why'd you do that? Why'd you take what my master drinks from? So he's talking to them like they all know what's going on. And they respond like they don't know what's going on. They say, what do you mean? We didn't take any gold. We didn't take any silver. Look at how honest we were. We brought back the money. We thought you guys made a mistake. So he says, they say, whoever you find stole anything from your house will get killed and we're all willing to be slaves for you. So he says, fine, you guys are right, you were extra honest, you did bring back the money, and therefore whoever I find the goblet, he will be a slave for me, you guys are all going to go home clean. So they each take down their sack, and they start looking. Now Menashe knows he's going to find it by Binyamin, so he starts with all the others, he goes one by one by one, finally he gets to Binyamin, and they find the goblet. And the brothers all tear their clothing, and they know that something's gone awry. Sages say they tore their clothing. A heavenly voice came out and said, Menashe, you caused the brothers to tear their clothing. Your portion in the land of Israel is going to be torn. And that's why the tribe of Menashe is split. Half on the eastern side of the Jordan, half on the western side in the land of Israel. And the brothers turned to Binyamin and they say, you thief, the son of a thief. Your mother, why did she die on the road? We know now. Because she stole Grandpa Lovin's truffin. And Dad said, whoever gets caught with Grandpa Lovin's stolen goods will die. So she didn't get caught. God helped her out. But that's why she died. And now you're stealing. You're getting us all in trouble all over again. Binyamin's quiet. They pack, they climb. Does Binyamin know? It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if Binyamin knew what was going on. And they come back to Yosef's house, and Yosef's playing a game. Yosef's saying, yeah, this is the goblet. He's telling them, what do you think? You take my goblet, I won't be able to know where you are. I have other ways. I used my sorcery. I knew who stole the goblet. I knew you took it. I figured it out. And they all come and they fall and they bow before Yosef. And Yehuda says, what could we say? God found our sin. God caused something to happen here. We didn't do anything wrong. God wants us to pay a price. And we'll be your servants. And the one who you found the goblet. And Yosef says, God forbid I should do such a thing. The one who stole it, he'll be a slave. You guys go home in peace. You guys are all okay. I got no issue with you. You guys go. I'm staying with Binyamin. And that's where the parsha ends. The parsha ends at this climax. Yehuda standing facing off Yosef. And Yosef saying, I should take you guys as servants? No, you guys go. What was Yosef's plan in all of this? Yosef needs to do a few things. Yosef needs to have the prophecy fulfilled that they all bow down. And they all have to bow down recognizing he's king, he's the one giving them the wheat, like the dream said. And Yosef sees them willing to forgo Shimon. He says, leave Shimon here. And they don't say all for one and one for all. They leave Shimon there. And now, they've all gotten gifts from him. They've all been very nice. And he's sending them home. And he's sending them home with Binyamin. And he's not quite certain what's going to happen on that way home. Where are they all holding? After sitting and eating and drinking with them, Yosef isn't confident that they should all be going home with Binyamin. And Yosef feels like these people have spent 22 years doing tshuva. They come back to Mitzrayim and they're looking for me. Why don't they recognize Yosef? Why is it that they're standing opposite Yosef and all of these games are happening and they don't recognize who he is? Because there's an eternal flaw in their thinking. They're saying it can't be that Yosef is there. They don't begin to entertain that maybe Yosef was right and we were wrong. They could stand there opposite Yosef, have all this discussion, see all the games that are happening, and they don't recognize that it's Yosef. That shows that after 22 years, they still don't recognize their mistakes. So Yosef says, fine.
It's very
what?
It's very natural or not?
It's natural.
They sold him as a slave, and they searched him in the process for him.
Well, Tinek.
They would not expect that he's a king.
Not quite. That depends, if you recall, he had a dream. And he told them the dream. And he told them they'd all be bowing for wheat. And here they're playing out the dream and they still don't see it. And they're not seeing it. They're basically saying, we were right. We feel bad. Why do they feel bad? They don't say we feel bad because Yosef was right. They don't say we feel bad because we should have been more faithful to our father or to our brother. They say the kid was wailing and we should have had more compassion the minute he was wailing. But they don't say our whole way of thinking was wrong. And Yosef is saying if they don't say their whole way of thinking is wrong, then they have to be brought to recognize their whole way of thinking is wrong. So Yosef is giving them an opportunity. We say, well, how does a person do tshuva? He's placed in the same scenario again, with the same strength and the same potential to do what he did before, and the same drive to do what he did before, and he overcomes, and he says, I won't let that happen again. That's tshuva. Tshuva isn't that a person sins when he's 22, and then when he's 95 and he can't do anything, then he lies down and he says, God, I feel so bad. That's not worth much. Tshuva is that the guy's back there at 22 with the same strength, with the same urge, and then in spite of everything, he says, no, I'm going to overcome. So Yosef is setting them up to a situation where they could very easily let go of Binyamin. And in order for them not to let go of Binyamin, they have to show strength and they have to show an allegiance that will overcome, that will strengthen the weakness that had been there. And if we think of the Shvatim as links, and those links are the source of the strength of the Jewish people, and we think of what happened when 10 brothers could sell one or 9 brothers could sell one, and what that means for the future of the Jewish people, and what it means now that all the brothers are coming and Yehuda is willing to give up his life and not let Binyamin go, so we could start seeing a little bit of what characteristics Yosef wants to develop within the Jewish people in playing this game with his brothers. And this is just a little bit of an eye-opener. We had only 45 minutes tonight to do Parsha that we could easily spend 2-3 hours on. But I didn't want to allow the week to pass without giving a little bit of time to get a little bit of a picture of the Parsha. So Mid Shem next year we'll have more time. But for this year, we did a little bit on the Parsha.